So we are individuals, or our individual selves, when we become a celestial being. In other words, well, I know who I am as far as what God has made, formed, created here on this earth. With a and the new celestial body, what will we be like? Well, I think 1 John chapter 3, verse 2 says that we will know Him as He is and will be like Him. And when Jesus Christ was walking on this earth after He was resurrected, He had the ability somehow to cause them not to be able to recognize Him, whether it was a change in His appearance or whether it was spiritually somehow upon them being able to recognize Him. I don't know. But anyway, at the appropriate time, they were able to recognize Him. And then He spent much time with over 500 of His disciples during the stay prior to His ascension into heaven. And they all knew who He was, knew His character, His individuality, His everything about Him. And I don't see there's any indication that it won't be any different for us. And that if it was, the way I look at it is that if I'm going to be somebody else and not even have some of my, you know, at least good thoughts of this life, then what's the point? What's the hope? I mean, just God would create somebody else, another being, and just call me the same name, you know? So that's a very good question. And it's and believe it or not, I've had people just in the past months who have been taught the opposite of that, they won't know who they are, they won't know anybody else, and everything will be new and different. Well, I mean, what's the point? You know, if you really think about it. So that fear is out there among Christian people. Take your Bibles and go to Daniel chapter 2. And this one here I called, Where's the Beast? Like, where's the beast? Where's the beast? And again, just let the Word of God speak for itself and see what we can come up with. See, the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation speak of a future beast, a king that will be empowered by the devil with a mindset of vengeance upon Israel. This beast may or may not be alive on earth today, and only the fulfillment of prophecy according to God's timetable will reveal this. If he's around and we're here and if we're still here and he shows up somehow, God might reveal it to us. I guess we'll know it. If we're taken away and then he's revealed, we'll know that too. So it doesn't bother me one way or another if he's here or if he's going to be here 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 years from now. At least I know where he's going to come from. Christian scholars over the centuries have guessed that the beast may have already existed. For instance, like Stalin, because of the bloodshed and gruesomeness and how he killed people. Also, Hitler. Some have said that he was possibly the beast during that time because of the bloodshed and the gruesomeness and how he treated the Jews. I mean, he'd probably been a pretty good candidate, but evidently he wasn't because he's dead and gone. So it's easy to look around you at times and look at current events and then try to say, this is him. And that's what they constantly do. Today they're trying to say it's either Gorbachev or it used to be Kissinger and a few others. I'm glad that my name hasn't gotten on that list yet. Also, a popular Christian belief is that they concluded that the Roman Empire will be the origination of the beast. Possibly even the Pope. Not necessarily one now, could be, or one to come. But that's the way that they try to predict it. However, nothing could be further from the truth. Even though the Bible does not give a specific name of that person, it does give the location from where he will originate. It does do that. Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a human-shaped statue. You ever read about that? Ever thought about that?
Yeah.
Has caused some scholars to presume that the two legs represent the Roman Empire, which split into two kingdoms, the Eastern and Western, which happened approximately 395 A.D. Okay? But the Jews were driven from Israel in 70 A.D., 325 years before the Eastern and Western Roman Empires were even formed. So they weren't even around in Jerusalem for the Romans and with the Eastern and Western Empire to take them over. Okay? The nation of Israel didn't even exist during the Eastern and Western Roman Empires. Consequently, the two legs of Nebuchadnezzar's statue could not be the two kingdoms that would rise up against Israel, because they weren't around at that time when there were two Roman kingdoms, Eastern and Western. Got me so far? Good. The image of Nebuchadnezzar's dream represents four kingdoms that would oppress the Israelite people and control Jerusalem. Now, one of the keys, or probably the key to this whole thing, Jesus Christ gave in Luke chapter 21 and verse 24. And keep your finger there with Daniel chapter 2. And then Luke 21, verse 24. And it says, "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations," talking about Israel, "and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." Okay? And which, even prior to this, Israel was already under Gentile rule during Daniel's time, which began a long time before this was even given. And so the key to the thing is that for a king or kingdom to qualify for ruling over Israel, that they had to oppress Israel and subject them to Gentile control while Israel was actually in Jerusalem. And then they would be taken away from Jerusalem and then oppressed and then be subjected to Gentile rule. Okay? So that's the key to that. Even though other empires conquered Jerusalem, they didn't do it while the Jews were in possession of it, or Israel was in possession of it. So they don't count. So if you know of other kingdoms that will say, "Well, look, I know this kingdom here, it ruled over Jerusalem, but it doesn't count." Because at the time, Jerusalem was not in possession of, Israel was not in possession of Jerusalem at that time. The book of Daniel chapters 2 and 11 give a very comprehensive interpretation of the dream of a human-shaped statue. And I'm sure glad that he did it, because we've got a lot of other people that's already trying to give theirs, and I'd rather believe what Daniel says about his own writing. From God's perspective, the world that Nebuchadnezzar ruled over was specifically the Babylon area, not the entire earth, because there were other inhabited areas at that time around the world that Nebuchadnezzar did not rule over. But when God called or said that Nebuchadnezzar ruled the world, it meant the Babylon area. That was from his perspective. Matter of fact, you can go back and look up in timetables, timelines, and look at what was happening just about the time that Jesus Christ was being crucified. And you can see in other parts of the world there were battles going on, and 50,000 people in one area was killed during this time when these different nations were fighting over freedom and rights and possession of land. And yet God mentions nothing of that going on, but what he was concerned about was the happening, which was Jesus Christ, his son, and that one death. Okay? See, there were other empires on earth during his reign, but God refers to the world as his people of Israel and the surrounding Arab nations, which does not include European nations. If we understand that Nebuchadnezzar ruled over the geographical area known today where the people of Israel and the surrounding Arab nations dwell, then it also becomes apparent, if we keep along that line of reasoning, that the Great Tribulation will also directly affect that specific area and not the outlying areas around the world. It will affect them indirectly, but not directly. But even indirectly is bad enough. Know what I mean? Okay. And also that the wrath that is to come, that we are promised not to be a part of, thank goodness, that it is going to be so destructive and massive, and it's just hard to believe some of the things that are going to happen unless you just read it in the book of Revelation, that it will not only affect Israel and that immediate area, but it will affect the entire planet and all of man's rejection of God. And we will not be a part of that. Thank goodness. Now let's take a look at the human-shaped image in chapter 2. And verse 32. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. This was a dream that Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed, and he wanted to know what this meant. So then he went to Daniel, and Daniel gave him the interpretation of it. And then in verse 38, Daniel gives him the interpretation of this dream, or starts to. And wheresoever the children of man dwell, the beast of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Now see how that sounds there, that he rules the entire globe? But he didn't. And then it says, thou art this head of gold. Now, there's no doubt. We know who the head of gold is. Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? And then in chapter 2, verse 39a, we want to see who's the breast and arms of silver. And after thee shall rise another kingdom inferior to thee. And this does not mean immediately after Nebuchadnezzar, but after his kingdom, which was also ruled by his son, Nabonidus, and later Nabonidus' son, Belshazzar. So there were some other kids involved here that continued to rule. So it wasn't an immediate thing after his death. It was after the kingdom was taken over by another kingdom. Okay? And this was the Medo-Persian kingdom. The Medo-Persian kingdom. Look at Daniel chapter 5, verse 25 through 31. And this is the writing that was written, many, many, Tikal, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tikal, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to who? The Medes and the Persians. Any doubt? No, there it is. And then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius, the Mede, took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So that's the interpretation of the breast and the arms of silver. Now, two kingdoms consisting of the Medes and Persians, which is currently Iran. That's where they came from. You can look it on any Bible dictionary and it'll take. Merged and defeated the Babylonians. So after Nebuchadnezzar was in there, then his son was in, took over the throne after his death, and then his son, his grandson, took over, and then Belshazzar, that's who we're talking about here, he was taken over by another king, which were the Medes and the Persians. And they defeated the Babylonians and subjected Judah and Jerusalem to forced rule, just like the Babylonians were doing. So they were still under this Babylonian, under this Gentile rule. The two arms and single breast of silver depicted the Medo-Persian merger. They were like two kingdoms that merged and took over the Babylon, which later was defeated by the third kingdom known as the Grecian or the Macedonian Empire. Some of these things that happened back then, and then some of the things that are happening in Macedonia today and last year and 5 years ago, it's beyond my comprehension. And how the Word of God was dwelling there at one time, and now it's a war zone. And you know who occupies Macedonia and that area up there, called the Serbs, and who else? Who are they made up of? Muslims and Christians. That's right. Daniel 11, verse 1 and 2. And I, in the first year, also I in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by this strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. In verse 3, Daniel 11, verse 3, and a mighty king, Alexander the Great, shall stand up and shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. The belly and thighs of brass represent Alexander the Great. I think Josephus speaks of a priest during the time that Alexander the Great came through and took over the kingdom from the Medes and Persians, and he knew the scriptures, and he was versed as far as what Daniel had predicted or wrote about, and that he pointed out to Alexander the Great that he would be this great leader that would come in and take over the Medes and the Persians. And he did it from Scripture. And so Alexander the Great saw that, hey, this is great. I appreciate this. And he was one of the priests at that time for the Israel nation. And so from that right there, maybe not necessarily alone, but that right there influenced him to be lenient to Israel, even though they were under subjection to the Greek kingdom. See, Alexander the Great conquered the Medo-Persian kingdom and reigned 12 years, and also subjected the Jews and Jerusalem to Gentile rule, but he was very lenient for them because of the priest. After his death, four of his generals divided his kingdom, which later became two kingdoms, the Seleucid and Ptolemaic empires. You might have heard of that. Then you got the legs of iron. What does the legs of iron represent? The Seleucid and Ptolemaic kingdoms. Seleucid is S-E-L-E-U-C-I-D. And Ptolemaic, P-T-O-L-E-M-A-I-C, is the other kingdom. And what it is, it's the northern kingdom, like of Iran, Iraq area, and the southern kingdom, which is Egypt now. That's what the two kingdoms, that they came together and then were able to take over the kingdom from Alexander the Great. They ganged up on him. Look at Daniel 11, chapter 4, through verse 6. And when he shall stand up, talking about Alexander the Great, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven. Now, how could anybody understand what that means unless God either gave the exact meaning of it or after it came to pass, and then it was like pretty evident. It says the kingdom would be divided toward the four winds of heaven, which were four generals, and not to his posterity, meaning that his sons would not take over his kingdom like Nebuchadnezzar's son did. And you know why his sons didn't take over the kingdom? They were assassinated. But God knew that in his foreknowledge. Isn't it amazing? I mean, right down to who and what and when and where and how many. Nor according to his dominion which he ruled. So, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those. And the king of the south, which is the Ptolemaic kingdom of Egypt, shall be strong, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. And in the end of years, they shall join themselves together, these two different kingdoms, for the king's daughter of the south, which is what?
Egypt.
Shall come to the king of the north, which is the Seleucid kingdom of Syria and now Iraq, to make an agreement. And that's the way they did that a lot of times back then. The kings of nations would have their daughters marry the king of another nation, and then they would make some agreements and combine efforts. And that's exactly what happened. Now, so now does everybody understand who the parts of this beast represent, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the legs, again, do not represent Rome, which was divided into two different kingdoms in 395 A.D. It represents who? The Seleucid and the Ptolemaic kingdoms, which is the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom. Got me so far? Okay. And keep it in the family. In the Bible land family. Okay? Now, think about it in terms of in the time to come when these 10 nations are going to rise up against Israel. So you have all these nations coming up. Then you're going to have that king of the south of Egypt that's going to advance toward the king of the north, which is... And then they're going to get together and clash. And then in doing so, Israel is going to be caught in the middle and disseminated and almost annihilated. And so that's how that's going to happen. So things that were happening then is a foreshadowing of that which is going to happen again in the future. Isn't that neat? So it doesn't say anything at all about Rome or Russia or China or anything like that. Now the feet and toes of the statue. There's another disagreement here among biblical scholars trying to say that this is another kingdom. However, the feet and toes do not represent another or fifth kingdom, but contain iron like the legs, which represent the 10 kings that will arise from the same region during the future last days. So those two kingdoms, the south and the north, both contain iron, right? And then so when it gets down to the toes, how many toes are there?
Ten
toes. Two big feet and 10 little toes. See how that? It's like two big feet, 10 little toes. Two big nations coming up against each other, and you got those 10 nations around there. Two big feet, 10 little toes. Now that's in Psalm 83, which we've already covered. The fourth kingdom, depicted by two legs, represent the Seleucid and Ptolemaic empires. These empires are referred to as the king of the north and other places in Daniel, which is the Seleucid, and then the king of the south, but the Ptolemaic empires. But the king of the north is also referred to as the beast. These two empires ruled and oppressed Jews and Jerusalem for almost centuries. longer than Babylon and the Greek empires combined, which is saying quite a bit. Daniel 11, verses 1 through 39, refers to the historical kings and prophecies that have been fulfilled. We don't have time right now to go through all of them, but when you're reading Daniel chapter 11, just in a cruising through the scriptures of reading it, it appears that you're talking about the same king or different, you know, maybe one or two kings all the way through chapter 11. And it kind of becomes confusing. But then when you go in there verse by verse, then you see that there is like Ptolemy 1, Ptolemy 2, Ptolemy 3, Antiochus the 3rd, Antiochus the 4th, Antiochus the 5th, I mean, Seleucus the 3rd. So there's a lot of different kings and things and activity that has gone on in those 39 verses. Lots of it. And so you have to go back and refer to some of the historical things that have been written about it to be able to go in and pick and line them up and see exactly which ones they are, but they all do line up. So it's not just one or two kings, and that's what causes kind of confusion when you go back and read it without being aware of that. Now, verses 40 and through 45 of Daniel 11 refer to a future king of the north. It just switches. Meaning of Syria and Iraq, which identifies the region from which the beast will come. So according to Daniel 11, 48 through 42, the king of the south, Egypt, will take aggressive action against the king of the north from Syria-Iraq area. This king of the north, the beast, will advance through Israel and is called the glorious land. Look at 11:41. We'll look at that. 11:41. Well, let's go down to verse 40. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over it. That's because the king of the north has gotten these other nine nations to go to war with him. They have combined their efforts. And then he shall enter also into the what? Glorious land. Who do you think that is? Israel. Sure. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand. Whose? These? The glorious land of Israel. Not unscathed, but a remnant will. And it says, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So Egypt has their day coming too. this king of the north, the beast, would advance through Israel, the glorious land spoken of right here that we just read, which will begin the great tribulation and then proceed right down into Egypt. The phrase king of the north is used throughout Daniel 11 as the Syria-Iraq region. And now if we stay in the context of the region of the Bible lands, not getting out of balance as far as, well, it's way up here or way over there, just keeping it in the context. As far as the historical kings that it's talking about, these historical kings do not talk about any other empires outside of the Bible lands area. And so if we stay along the lines of these historical kings, then the future kings will refer to the same region. Unless we just say, I think it's this, and then we just place in another country saying, well, I think the beast is Russia. That's the only way you can put it in. Therefore, the king of the north and the beast are the different expressions referring to the same king or the kingdom of the same region. Okay?